Good evening, guys. Although nobody's here yet, so you'll be seeing it after the fact. I think when I'm doing these Pontificating with Pete segments, they're going to be done based on necessity, I would say, more than anything else. And so tonight, I thought it would be a good opportunity to come to you guys and, you know, talk about not just what happened last night, but also the state of where we are right now, because I've been paying very close attention to obviously what's going on in Ukraine and, of course, what the overall response was last night from the President's State of the Union, which I thought was a mixed bag. That would be the best way that I can describe it. That to me, I think more than anything else, in this moment, we need the type of leadership that really stands out, that is dynamic and recognizes the moment. And I just didn't get the impression. I did not get the impression that President Biden met the moment. And so, in my opinion, it was a failure from the standpoint that I didn't get the sense that he really commanded the situation the way that it needed to be commanded. So let's start with what he actually did right, which, you know, there were a couple of moments where he was correct. Obviously, America standing with the Ukrainian people was obviously important. So I'll give him credit for that. He was correct in, well, say what you want, but addressing the fact that American jobs have been making a comeback in certain parts of the country that really need to be made. So in a way, you could say that he was touting America first. So give him credit for that. He obviously was correct about trans rights and talking about passing the Equality Act, which would trump the Don't Say Gay bill and the stupidity that is Florida politics and what the Florida GOP does down here. So that in itself, I would say credit to Biden where credit is due. And to me, that's pretty much where it begins, and that's where it ends. In terms of where the president was wrong, he was obviously wrong when addressing the issue of police. We do not need to increase police funding in the United States. In fact, the NYPD, the New York Police Department, has more money, I'm pretty sure, than the Russian army. So that should pretty much put in perspective for you just how overbloated our police spending, much less our military spending, is in the United States. And yet the president, in true right-wing fashion, decided to say, yeah, we need to increase funding for police. No, what you need to do is you need to eliminate qualified immunity. So for those of you who don't know, qualified immunity basically shields police departments from being sued by local taxpayers. And so when the police department is guilty of a crime, let's say, and the victims choose to sue, who are they suing? They're suing the community. And the community has to pay the bill for the police that have committed a crime. If you end qualified immunity, it'll be the police that ultimately end up paying. So that in itself could do wonders for policing in the United States. And the fact that it isn't being done, and the fact that you have a president, Democratic president, who is going out there saying we need to keep funding the police. Well, why would he do that? On the one hand, you would say that that's really President Biden's politics, that he believes in overbloated police spending. Now, I'm not somebody out here saying defund the police. What I am saying, though, is that the issues that police have today and that citizens with police have today is very clear cut in many ways. If you end qualified immunity, what you're going to do is you're going to force police the police, if you follow. So for the bad apples that are within a given department, they are not going to be getting off scot-free anymore, because the honest actors within the ranks are going to look at those, let's say, crooked cops and say, I'm not going down for you. I'm not going to allow you to commit heinous crimes, not going to be able to commit race crimes. You're not going to be able to commit, trafficking crimes, whatever it is. The police that are on the level are going to look at the crooked cops and basically say, if this is how you think you're going to conduct business, it's not going to be in this department. And you're not going, my pension is not going to be called into question because of your policing. That is how policing will correct itself in the United States. If you end qualified immunity, you are taking the power out of the hands of the crooked police institutions. Everyone talks about policing as crooked in the United States. Well, is it crooked because all cops are crooked, or is it because the system protects crooked cops? The system protects crooked cops. If you end qualified immunity, that issue would be taken out of the equation. In terms of the other things that President Biden was incorrect about, he basically went on nothing but hot air. And you could say that his speech was basically two speeches. He came out hot, if you will, in the first 20 minutes. And then over time, he kind of petered off. And I know there's a lot of people who are going to highlight the gaffes that he made, the fact that he was not up to the challenge in the moment, that it looked like he was in over his head. That's what they're going to focus on. What I'm going to focus on, what we all should be focusing on, is where he got things wrong and specifically what he missed. The IPCC just came out with a report that says we are in dire circumstances regarding climate change. 2 degrees increase in our surface temperature. To say that that is catastrophic would be an understatement. You know how many times the president mentioned that part of the equation in his speech last night? Zero. Not once. He spoke for an hour and 15 minutes. I would like to think he had an opportunity to get it in there. He got all his little nooks and crannies in there over the course of an hour and 15 minutes. I even suggested doing a drinking game. Take a sip every time Vice President Harris and Speaker Pelosi stand up to cheer. Got to make them look good. You know, we can't have our president not looking good right now. I'll take a sip of water. This is water, by the way. When you have an existential crisis like the environmental disasters that we are seeing right now, I don't know if you saw the footage of the floods that are happening in Australia at the moment. The commander-in-chief is obligated to lead the world, not just the nation. And in that moment, President Biden absolutely failed. As a matter of fact, I wrote these down. And so at this moment, I can tell you exactly what the president was missing, because he missed a lot last night. So not only did he miss the importance of talking about the climate crisis and what that means on a global scale. I mean, people can obviously focus on what's going on right now in Ukraine and Russia and how devastating that is. Nobody emits a larger carbon footprint on this planet than the military-industrial complex. And that's not just the United States. It's all of the superpower nations between us, Russia, China, obviously the three main, and then anybody else in between. And so everything that's going on right now, the dropping of the bombs, foot troops, the tanks, all that, that's an immensely large carbon footprint that's being emitted at a time where we cannot afford such a thing. So thinking about how do we de-escalate this situation? Well, we need to de-escalate it. And right now, it looks like we're inching closer and closer and closer to World War III. Because all I can see is more saber rattling, more weaponry, and more of a bombastic leader, dictator, let's be honest, who I don't think really cares. I think Putin is definitely the type of leader who he wants to make his mark on history. And that's a scary thought. So how do you de-escalate? Well, I don't see anybody getting to the negotiating table. Very good point, Matt. We spend $1 billion on AC. That's a lot of money for air conditioning. And everybody smash that like button and share the stream if you can. Obviously, we'll be going live at 8 p.m. sharp, but I wanted to come on here for about 20, 25 minutes just to give you guys, you know, some pontification about what happened last night. And so in lieu of this massive war machine that we are guilty of, we're now seeing it in Russia. And let's not forget that Wall Street is not completely sanctioning the Russian oligarchs. I wonder why. When this will turn is when the universal consensus, especially amongst the people of Russia, is that this will no longer be tolerated. But again, when you're dealing with a nuclear superpower, you can only push them so far. Knowing exactly what Putin wants is going to be tantamount of importance here. What I suspect, as most of us probably know, we are not getting the full story. We as American citizens must understand that if you think you're even getting more than 10% of what's really happening on corporate news, well, then you're still asleep at the wheel. Even if you have inside information, that's only a fraction of what is actually happening. I have no doubt that American diplomats and Russian diplomats and Ukrainian diplomats and even Chinese diplomats have already met. There has probably been thorough discussion in terms of how this has to end, because it has to end in only one way. All parties involved have to be able to save face. If they can't, then it won't end. There's too much at stake here, like World War III at stake. Putin cannot walk away from this looking like a loser, and neither can Zelensky. There's too much riding on it from all sides. So now the question becomes, what do we ultimately get as a solution? Is America going to back off in insisting that, you know, we have NATO in Ukraine? I would hope so. You could take it a step further and say that you've got, with all due respect, Representative Kinzinger, lunatics suggesting a no-fly zone. Let me tell you, a no-fly zone, that's World War III. That is World War III. If you want the quickest way to guarantee we have World War III, have a no-fly zone on the Ukraine. That will make it happen. And it will be scarier than you could possibly imagine. And that will likely drag us into it. And that is I will say to Biden's credit. And like I said, it wasn't like his speech last night wasn't devoid of any positives. While he talked tough, I get the sense that he was more channeling a Bernie Sanders than a Hillary Clinton regarding how we deal with this situation. I truly believe that Biden doesn't want this to lead to any type of a full-scale war, because who knows where that will end. It may end us as civilization. So we certainly don't want that. And thankfully, we don't have a trigger-happy president, at least not at the moment. You never know where it may go. But the other things that I wanted to mention, that's on the foreign side. And we will talk more about that this evening. So keep in mind that de-escalation, in my opinion, NATO has to be on the table obviously not expanding, but reduction in terms of their scope. And so that will be one way. But again, I still think if you're asking me right now, what I believe is the crux of this whole issue, is it truly about uniting Ukraine back into the Soviet Union or reuniting Russia, as people have suggested is what Putin is doing? I don't believe that. What I do believe is that Nord Stream 2, the pipeline, everything always comes back to money and power. And whoever controls these pipelines, you know, ultimately are the ones who believe that they control the world. And let's face it, the only real export that Russia has at this point is petroleum. But in lieu of this insanely dangerous climate crisis, the president of the United States did not mention the biggest existential threat to our survival right now. That is a colossal failure on his part. Colossal. I don't know how many more alarm bells need to be sounded before we recognize just how dangerous our circumstances are. I'm in South Florida. It just turned March, and it's in the late 80s and humid already. It's pretty bad, guys. Now, I know most people think that Florida's, you know, pretty hot to begin with, especially down these parts. But you know what? I can't show you too much because I'm wearing a nice getup this evening. Mr. Hartman is coming on the podcast. So I want to look good. I've got mosquito bites on my arms already. And it was February the other day. Mosquito bites in February. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take at this point. I don't know how much more fear-mongering needs to be put into people's blood in order for them to move their ass. But we have to understand this moment that we don't know what it's going to be like a few months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, if it's even going to be livable in many parts of the world. We're not just talking about sea level rise. We're talking about unhealthy temperatures in order to live. You know, who's to say that once we get to May, June, July, August here in Florida, that it's not going to be triple digits every day with humidity that is ultimately going to push us to what would feel like 110, 115 degrees. This is not healthy. This is beyond dangerous. And I know that there are other things that the president missed last night, which I'll get to in a second. But my God, did he miss that moment? Horrifically missed it. He didn't mention student debt. With the stroke of a pen, he could cancel all of it and revitalize the economy instead of all this smoke blowing up, these people's rear ends about how great things are in the economy right now. The economy is terrible. And the president has an approval rating in the 30s. Worse than Trump. That's pretty bad. Although, you know, if he were to cancel student debt, amazingly, his approval rating would go up. And I wonder why it won't. Why won't he do it? Why won't President Biden so simply cancel student debt? Not even $10,000 worth of student debt. Because when you are bought and paid for by corporate special interests, you answer to them. And in this case, he answers to Wall Street. I can still remember. See, I look at the fine print, specifically during the primary between Bernie and Biden. And what was Biden doing? Biden couldn't get any momentum whatsoever. But you know what he did get? He got ungodly amounts of money from Wall Street banks. They just kept throwing it in. Take as much as you want, buddy. However much you want, we got you covered. But know that when you take that kind of money, there's always strings attached. Always strings attached. And so when you don't talk about canceling student debt, something that simple, why wouldn't you do it? Well, when you have $1.3, $1.4 trillion in student debt, investment banks are making money hand over fist on that debt. Billions of dollars. Probably every day. So if they have to spend $20, $30 million on making sure that whether it's the president, whether it's elected representatives in government, don't push for student loan debt cancellation, that there's enough resistance. I love that word. I love that word, resist. Totally great word, resistance. They're resisting all the things that people care about. So when you're resisting change that matters. So, of course, no mention of student debt cancellation. No mention of cannabis decriminalization. If you're going to be a society that is going to do real criminal justice reform, like Mrs. Jackson, who's going to, knock on wood, be on the Supreme Court, that was an excellent move by President Biden. You give him credit for doing that. Why? Because she is somebody who is a true criminal justice reform champion, known specifically for reducing nonviolent drug offender criminal sentences. That's wonderful. Now, where are you making the push so that now we have decriminalization of what shouldn't even be considered a narcotic? It's a plant that grows in the ground. But when big alcohol and big pharma get their hooks into people, well, now you know why we don't have cannabis decriminalization, much less legalization. And of course, everything is going to have to happen at the state level. But that is a colossal failure of epic proportions on the president's part. And again, with the stroke of a pen, can make it so. No mention of universal health care. Only mention of free vaccines. Well, you know what? Well, if we had universal health care, everything would be free at the point of service, not just vaccines. And during a pandemic, which we're still in, thousands of people are dying every day from COVID-19. The president has the executive authority through the Social Security Act, a clause that was implemented as part of Obamacare, to expand Medicare to everybody. Now, of course, we know why they won't do that, because private insurance and big pharma will never allow it to happen. Not with the amount of money that they spend. Nobody spends more money on Capitol Hill than big pharma and private insurance. And so if we got expanded Medicare to everybody for however long, let's say 6 months, you really think that this country would allow it to be? Do you really think this country, if it had a taste of universal health care, that it would give it up or would allow the government to take it away from them? Absolutely not. And then you would get a few million people in the streets in Washington, D.C. But you're not going to fight for something you don't really know about. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not doing that. But again, stroke of a pen, President Biden could do that. So that's three. There is one more thing that I want to mention before we wind down this conversation this evening. You know, everybody wants to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lori Boebert, and we will talk about them tonight. But here's the thing that a lot of people need to know about what is one of the biggest impediments to progress in politics, and that is the consultant class. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a congressional representative in Georgia's 14th district. It is a plus 28 red. If you have any idea what type of numbers that actually is, you would understand that anybody who runs as a Democrat trying to unseat her is trying to grift you out of your money. It's that simple. Nobody is beating Marjorie Taylor Greene, no matter how much of a jackass she acts like, if you're running as a Democrat. Now, if there was somebody who wanted to run against Marjorie Taylor Greene as a Republican in a primary, maybe a more moderate, sane Republican, yeah, then you would have an opportunity to actually unseat her. But instead, the Democratic Party's consultant class is shoving millions and millions of dollars into a primary, no less, and then ultimately, as I was saying, one thing that you all have to remember, and this is very important, and I'll do this again, and of course, my camera's a little unstable, but that's better. That looks good. As much as people want Marjorie Taylor Greene to be out of politics, and I get that, but she's not going anywhere, what you have to remember is that the people in the Democratic establishment, particularly in the consultant class, they are making money hand over fist, because anyone who is giving money to the Democratic candidates running against Marjorie Taylor Greene, with all due respect, you're a bunch of suckers. That's what you are. You're a bunch of suckers, and you might as well light that money on fire, because it is literally being wasted on a race that you have no chance in hell of even getting within 30 points of. And yet, I see Democratic consultant chieftains like Don Winslow touting this race. You know how many good non-corporate candidates there are out there that could use your help? If you can't see what the grift is, just look at that race. That's all you need to see. It's a joke. And shame on anybody pushing it. People want to know why no one gives a damn about electoral politics anymore? Look at that effing race. We have a friend, multiple friends running for office in Georgia. They know that this is going on, and they can't believe it, and they can't stand it, and they can't say anything about it. So I'll say it for them. If you give money to any of the Democratic candidates running against Marjorie Taylor Greene, you're a sucker. Don't be a sucker. Be smart. and know that there are good candidates that are running for office out there that are not taking any corporate money, that are running in viable races and are actually going to serve the community. I had a friend tell me that the candidates, the Democratic candidates running against Marjorie Taylor Greene, they don't run on anything. All they run on is, I'm running against her. That's it. They have nothing. They don't offer anything. Can you believe that? Shame on every single one of you, and shame on every one of you grifting pieces of you-know-what that are trying to get people to give money to that. Because everyone knows why you're doing it. It's just another way to wash millions and millions of dollars amongst people who, quite frankly, especially when it comes to Democrats, they get paid to be losers. Imagine if you got paid to be a winner. Imagine if winning was actually something that mattered. It doesn't. It's just keep the cycle going of corporate-run candidates and corporate-run establishment. That's it. That's all that matters. Nothing else. Just look at that race and look at what a joke it really is. Plus 28? If anything is a plus 7, you're basically considered a fool for even trying. People waste money trying to run against Debbie Wasserman Schultz down here, who are on the Republican side. This is a plus 12 blue district, and they know they can't beat her, but they run anyway. Could you imagine a plus 28 and you're pulling that ish? That's incredible. And there are people who are literally suckered into this. That is like, I mean, I know we're a wasteful society. I know we waste money in the most egregious ways possible, like war. But man, you're going to waste that kind of money on a race that you, if I knew what their motivation was, if I knew that there was some benefit to what they're doing, okay, fine. Maybe. But there's not even that. It's just a waste. I hope people see this, and I hope it gets to the right people. And if you want to throw your hatred, if I end up screwing up plans for some of these people because they get exposed as a result of it, good. I don't care. If there's one thing you guys probably know about me at this point is that I don't give a damn, because we really do not have time for this. We really don't. We need to get our priorities straight. And right now we don't have them straight. We're going in a million different directions and we are not succeeding in the way that we need to. So just know that if you are considering giving money to a candidate running for Congress in Georgia's 14th district, as a Democrat, you are lighting money on fire. We'll see you at 8 o'clock.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.